Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who met his wife while training for the 400 meters in Seattle and is eating gluten-free whilst lusting after bread, Dave Denniston.
My name is Dave Denniston, and welcome to the latest episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. And one of my secret obsessions lately, you guys, has been networking with physicians on LinkedIn. And it's been a lot of fun meeting and connecting with doctors in the U.S. and all throughout the world. Well, anyhow, I had reached out and mentioned in an update I was looking for some interesting guests on my next podcast episode, and a physician reached out to me, and I just thought he had a really cool story to tell, and it really got me thinking. It got me wondering, how does medicine compare and contrast here in the U.S. with an experience overseas? So our guest today is Dr. Samir Gupta. He got his MBBS in India, and a couple of years later moved to the U.S. where he did his residency and his fellowship and started in practice, but I understand now that he's come back to India. Well, welcome, Dr. Gupta.
Hi, Dave. Thank you for having me over.
Oh, so glad that you're here. I think this is going to be great fun and great learning experience for us. Well, I quickly summarized your story, so tell us more. Where did you grow up? Tell us about your experiences.
Sure. So, you know, I was born and raised in New Delhi, which is the capital of India. I went to school, that's my high school and everything else in New Delhi, and I stayed with my parents during that time. And after that, I decided to go into medicine, and I went to medical school in a completely different part of the country. It was in the southern part of India, and there I lived in a dorm, and, you know, it was a great experience, made very good friends, very good education. After that, after my education, I decided, like, you know, what do I want to do in life and stuff like that. So my older sister was in the U.S., and I'd been talking to her, and, you know, she'd kind of been mentoring my career, and she's also a physician. She was in the U.S. And that got me going, and then I came to the U.S., and I started training at Penn State. I did my internal medicine residency at Penn State in Hershey. That was followed by a couple of fellowships, and I finally finished everything in July of this past year, in 2014. And then, you know, got thinking, me and my wife got thinking, what do we want to do now that we're all done, we've finished studying? And so we decided to move back to India. I moved back approximately in October, around October of last year. And I've been working over here ever since. It's been about 9 months, and it's been a good 9 months.
Interesting. Well, I have so many different questions about this. I guess first, you know, tell us about how you got started in medicine. And in conjunction with that, was going to the U.S. always the plan, or was it only this moment you started talking with your sister?
So what got me into medicine, you know, it's a couple of things. I come from a family of physicians, actually. My dad's a doctor, my mom's a doctor, and my older sister's a doctor. So definitely that was something that I was exposed to early on in my life. My dad's friends are physicians, so I definitely, you know, interacted with them, their kids. Education is, you know, coming from India, you know, education is highly stressed upon in our growing up ages, in our families. I think a part of the thing is that, you know, as India is a developing country and, you know, now there's a lot of money and a lot of everything else going on, you know, people see education as a way out to lead a good life. So education in India is given a lot of importance, you know, unlike in the U.S., which I saw, or not, I wouldn't say unlike, but a little bit different from the U.S., where, you know, you tell your children that, you know, go play a lot of games, you know, excel in extracurricular. You know, here the general theme has been, you know, extracurricular, but that does not mean that you will not excel in your education. So, you know, that being said, you know, looking at my parents and, you know, they definitely mentored my career. So I was always exposed to medicine at an early age, and it was something I decided to take up. As far as coming to the U.S. is concerned, I have a lot of friends and family in the U.S., and I would often meet them, and, you know, they would come to India for holidays, and my older sister was in the U.S. She moved halfway through my med school, and then she was doing her residency in the U.S. So I would talk to her, and she would say it's a completely different experience. It's a very important experience to have. It makes you a different person. So, you know, I thought about that a little bit, and then she definitely mentored my career, and I decided to come to the U.S. soon after my medical school.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've heard about India that particularly emergency services is something that is just really in need because traffic, particularly in some major areas, gets so bad. Is it like that in medicine too? You know, is there just like big backups, huge waits? You know, what is it like being a physician in India?
It's pretty interesting. You know, the first couple of months, you know, I did my medical school in India, and after that, I did my internship, which is kind of a year which is mandatory for you to do for you to graduate, where you go and work in different specialties for a year. And I did that at one of the busiest hospitals in India, in New Delhi. It's called Safdarjung Hospital. And I did my year of internship over there back in 2005. It was an absolute, what you were talking about. It was a lot of patients, just a lot of people, a lot of backups, a lot of waiting lines, and limited resources. But, you know, India is a country of 1.3 billion people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's 1.3 billion people, so that's a lot of people. It's about three times the size of the U.S. in just in terms of population. Traffic definitely is something it's also there in the U.S. It's, you know, traffic problems are also in the U.S. Emergency service, but in the last 10 years, you know, since I left, now I've come back, medicine has taken a 360-degree turn.
Really?
There are a lot of big corporate hospitals. There's a lot of money, so people are ready to get good care. They get ready to pay for good care. They have top-notch hospitals over here. They have tie-ups with Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, Boston Colleges. They have visiting faculty. Just a few weeks ago, we at our institution hosted people from Chicago. We're hosting somebody from Florida next week, actually. So, you know, there are a lot of people. We are having a lot of conferences, international conferences. So healthcare overall in India has definitely improved. There are a lot of services. The latest technology is available, but it comes at a price.
Now, is it a single-payer system, or is it all private, out-of-pocket? Is it a kind of a combination where there's some sort of Medicare like there is here? What is it like in terms of how people pay for service?
So the pay-for-service, it's not a single-payer system like it is in the UK or in the European countries. There are multiple payers. They have what we call as private insurance companies. You can, you know, if you're a family of four people and your job is not giving you an insurance, then you can go and buy this insurance at a reasonable rate for the most part from private insurance companies. If you are in any way or shape or form associated with a government job or you're working for the state, whether you're working for the electricity department, whether you're working for the waterworks, or you're working for the telephone department, which is also public in India, it's by the government, then they do provide you insurance. They do take care of a lot of your healthcare expenditure. They do not have Medicaid per se, but they do have all these different insurance plans. Now, if you do not have any of them, then you are forced to pay out of pocket. Most of the government institutions are the government hospitals, the equivalent of the county hospitals. They treat you at a much more reasonable rate, but then they have limited resources. But the private places are, you have to pay cash for your services, but the actual amount of cash is not as ridiculous as it is in the U.S. It is definitely more reasonable, but it still comes at a cost, but it's not as high as it in the U.S.
Yeah, well, I mean, overall cost of living is lower still, is it not? Or has inflation kind of caught up overall?
Oh, the inflation is definitely catching up. Just the other day when I moved back to India, that's the first thing that struck me, that, you know, I went there, like they have Starbucks and McDonald's and every nook and corner over here now. So I went and had they actually have Indian versions of, they've, you know, McDonald's and has, and Dunkin' Donuts, for example, they have changed the menu to suit the palate of the local population.
No cow.
But they do have like a chicken tikka burger. They have vegetarian burgers that they put a potato patty in the middle, or a vegetable patty in the middle. So, you know, they have to do that. You know, they know India is a big market and there's a lot of money to be made. So, yeah.
How interesting. Well, you know, you've lived in both these worlds as a physician, and compare and contrast for us medical school. What are the similarities? What are the differences in training as you've started in medical school there and did residency over here? What have you seen?
So, you know, it's kind of a very interesting thing. I think the biggest difference is at what stage in your life you start medical school. In India, you start medical school, which is also similar to what it is in Europe, because India follows the European system, is you graduate high school and you go into straight-up college or undergrad. And medical school in India is an undergraduate degree. It's longer. It's longer. It's like it's about 5.5 years, but it's still an undergraduate degree. So you enter medical school at the age of 18. Now, that is very different from the U.S., where you do undergrad, then you do med school. And then you, so you are graduating at the age of 26, at least, 18 plus 4 plus 4. Over here, you do 18 plus 5 and a half. So, you know, it's 23 and a half, 24, you're a physician. So that's one very important thing. And I think that plays into the mindset also, you know, how mature you are. And, you know what I'm saying, right? I mean, there's a difference in your mindset when you do something at 22 versus at 22, you're already a physician.
And do they go through residency? Like they do
so
here,
they do
or
have, yeah, so they do have you know, residency programs over here. They do have residency, which are similar to the ones in the U.S. They do have fellowship programs in the U.S. and they also have fellowship programs over here. They're just called different names. There is a little bit difference in terms of the actual time that it takes to do residency. For example, in the U.S., the residency, the time of residency or the duration of the residency program may vary depending upon what residency you're doing. For example, neurosurgery may be a straight-up 7-year program, or general surgery may be a 5-year program. Over here, neurosurgery is considered like a fellowship. So, but general surgery is 3 years, internal medicine is 3 years, dermatology is 3 years, and ophthalmology is 3 years. So the duration of the residency is standard irrespective of what subspecialty you're doing. In the U.S., it kind of varies. The medical school experience over here and there is approximately, it's a little bit different, but it, you know, definitely it has the similarities. You know, we do a lot of clinicals there, we do a lot of clinicals here. You know, I mean, the education definitely is, you know, the patient care remains patient care. Our clinicals here, we do our clinicals there, it's about the same. But I think the cost is definitely one very important factor.
Which tell us about that. How much does it cost, and how does that compare to the U.S.?
So the cost of medical school may vary depending upon what medical school you actually end up going to. So there are three categories of medical schools in India. One is if you're in a government institution. So every state has about 4 or 5 public schools, as you call them, or they, you know, government schools. They are extremely competitive to get into also, but the government subsidizes the education. So you might graduate medical school if I tell you, you probably won't believe me or you'll start laughing. You know, you graduate medical school with what, $400 or $500?
Over a period.
That's at the public school. However, there are private institutions too. The education in the private institution is a little bit more expensive, similar to what it is in the U.S. In terms of the difference, but you know, for example, if you go to a private school in India, you probably end up paying about $45,000 or $40,000 over a period of 4 years.
Not per year, but over a period of 4 years.
Not per year. Yeah. So you might graduate, you might finish off with about $45,000-$50,000, and that's, I'm telling you, the upper limit. There are a lot more which will cost like $25,000 or $20,000 over a period of 4 years. But that's the upper limit. Now, in the U.S., it's very, very, very different, right? I mean,
huge difference. That's 1 year.
That's 1 year. Yeah. So I think Baylor is one of the cheaper private schools. I mean, it's an excellent school, and they have $31,000 or $32,000 every year. That's their cost. The students over there definitely come up with a lot of loans. Unfortunately, you know, it's about close to $200,000 in loans.
Did I hear you right that, so yeah, the two options, the public and the private medical schools, and the public was less than $1,000 a debt when someone's done?
Yep.
Wow.
See, the government subsidizes it for you. The government subsidizes the education for you with the hope that you will you know, that they want to improve the healthcare facilities. So they want more people to go into healthcare. I mean, that's the entire motive, right? I mean, they want people to go into healthcare. They want people to become doctors. They want people to serve and improve the quality of healthcare that is there in the country. So, you know, healthcare is very long. I mean, you know, I did after high school. I graduated high school. You know, I mean, I did 16 years after high school. 16 years. That's a long time.
Yeah. Wow. So, well, do you think, one of my biggest nuts that really is so important to me is this whole debt thing. And I write about it a lot. And one of the questions I've never really explored a whole lot is, for example, could an American student graduating high school, because now they could possibly go to India and avoid maybe undergrad, could they attend like the kind of medical school you went to? You know, could they go to a private Indian medical school?
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. Actually, one of my, you know, I do have some family members who did that. They thought that education in the U.S. was very expensive for them, and their it was just too expensive for them. So they did come to India for medical school, and you know, they came here, and it costed them 30% of what it would have costed them in the U.S.
Right.
As far as time is concerned, they probably graduated, you know, a couple of years ahead. Mm-hmm. So people can come here. It is an option, but you have to realize that it's a very different culture. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. one of the important things you do in medicine is you talk to the patients. You cannot be a doctor if you don't talk to patients. Now, if you talk to patients, the patients over here don't know English, right?
Mm.
English is a common language, but it's not the language. In fact, you know, like I told you, I moved to a different part of the country for my medical school. And mm-hmm. I had to learn the local language, which was completely different from my mother tongue. It was absolutely, it was like, it's like, you know what, Swahili is to, you know, like Arabic.
Mm.
That was
a significant of a difference.
That's a big difference. So they spoke a different language, and I had to learn the language to communicate with the patients. It was fantastic. I loved it.
Were you able to pick it up quickly? I mean, you know, with that kind of difference, or was there enough similarities between?
I mean, there were some similarities. I mean, maybe I exaggerated the difference a little bit, but there were some similarities in some words. But then you do, you know, your friends teach you a little bit. You learn a little bit by talking to the local people. You know, get me some water, get me some this. You know, it's not impossible, but it's definitely challenging. You know, the counterpart of that would be a lot of people from, if you're working in New York or if you're working in any of these big cities where there's a big immigrant population, or if you're working in Florida, you have to learn Spanish to talk to the patients.
Right, absolutely.
Right? There's a big South American population over there, and then you have to learn the language. You cannot not learn the language and deal with patients. So I think if somebody does want to come here, they have to understand that it's not only education, it's also interaction.
And do you think someone could, you know, if someone was excited and they wanted to do this kind of opportunity, you know, could they just pick it up as they go, or would they have to know it ahead of time?
Oh, they can absolutely pick it up as they go, absolutely. You know, there are, where my sister went to school, they had a lot of international students. There were students from a large part of Africa, some of them from the UK. And they did not know the local language which was spoken in that medical school. And then they had, you know, they had like training sessions, or they had like coaching classes for you to learn medical local language. You know, in the U.S. it's something similar. We have apps for learning Spanish on your phone.
Yes.
For medical
yes.
Spanish.
Very interesting. And do they, what are most of the lectures done? So when you're not treating patients and you're in the classroom,
mm-hmm.
Are they mostly in English, like at the medical school you went
absolutely.
To, or was
English,
it in
English? English. Every education, every test, every exam, everything you do in the professional level is in English.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Always in English. Like, you know, all the local work over here that I do, you know, like I see patients, I write my prescriptions, I write medicines. It's always English.
So that would be That would be the easy part. For an American student. It's just more the change in culture And I suppose they could do it when they're 18, right? I mean, they don't have to wait till they're 22 and a graduate student if
Absolutely.
They were interested. So, I mean, really,
exactly.
if we think about it, right, I mean, if it's $45,000, I mean, heck, if you go to Harvard or Stanford for your undergrad, right, and, you know, let's say your parents are well off enough, but you still have to take out loans of $20,000 a year, you're still in the hole relative to
yep.
Having the education in India before you even go to medical school. So
right.
it's a huge fraction.
But there is a caveat to this. I mean, if you are an international person and you want to come here, they have this, they would have to give like a small test, but then they would have to pay like a high fee for getting into mm-hmm. the school. But that fee would still be nowhere near what they would be paying in the U.S. Absolutely not. I don't know what the fee structure is, but the fee structure varies from college to college. It's probably like $30,000, $40,000, somewhere in that range. So even if the entire thing cost you about $75,000, you were still up $150,000,
$200,000. You might just break even with the undergraduate before
yep.
the
yep.
medical school debt in many cases.
Yeah.
Huh. and so, you know, people go through that. You know, they're not an MD usually, right? They're an MBBS,
yep.
like you were. When you came to the U.S. or applying for residency programs, is there a stigma attached to MBBS, do you think, or are most programs pretty accepting of that?
So, you know, there are two things to answer your question. The first is, MBBS is a batch, is like a, because we do a bachelor's, right? I mean, medical school over here is bachelor's. That's why MBBS is Bachelor of Medicine and Bachelor of Surgery kind of thing. So it's mm-hmm. a bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
It's the equivalent of an MD for all practical purposes. But you know, that's why it's a bachelor's, and over there it's a doctorate of medicine because you're doing an MD.
Mm-hmm.
The medical schools in the U.S., you know, U.S. is definitely a place, it's a melting pot. People from all over the world are there. So they do understand what an MBBS actually is. But the second part of the question, is there like a stigma attached to it? I think there is and there isn't. There, as an international medical graduate, applying to residency in the U.S. definitely posed bigger challenges and bigger hurdles compared to if I'd done the same thing in the U.S. So definitely it's a little bit more challenging, and there are multiple examples that I can give and multiple statistics I can write off. But definitely it is a little bit more challenging get a residency spot in the U.S. being an international graduate compared to what it is in the U.S. Yeah.
I sure see a lot of people with it, though. So, I mean, do you think it's just, is it certain positions that are more open to it than others? Or, you know, what's behind that?
Yeah, so, you know, if you look at the entire residency thing, I was talking to a lot of my friends in the U.S., and they all say, you know, people who've graduated from the U.S. medical schools, and, you know, they always say that, you know, I'm in so much debt. I want to do one specialty, but if I do this specialty, I'll be in taking loans forever.
Yeah.
So I have to do, like, a specialty which is more competitive, which pays better, so I can pay my loans off faster.
Right.
That is one thing, but, you know, when you come from, as an international medical graduate, you know, but the U.S. is very good about standardizing things. So there are people from all over the world who come to the U.S., and then you have to take like this test, which is the equivalent, I would say, of a GMAT or a GRE, which creates like a playing field, a level playing field for all international medical graduates. And it's also taken by the U.S. graduates, actually. It's called the USMLEs,
mm-hmm.
so which stands for United States Medical Licensing Exam. So if you take that test and... You know, so it's like everybody takes that test, irrespective of where you're from, who you are, or what you do. And that's like to make sure that for you to enter the U.S. or for you, that's what a barometer used by the programs to judge the competency of the applicants.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, you can, so you go to school in Japan and you have a guy who's come from India and you have a guy who's come from Africa. You've got three applications in front of you. How do you know who is how bright?
Good old standardized test.
Exactly, standardized test. So that's one thing that they do, and that definitely levels the playing field a little bit. But, you know, if you, for example, if you want to do a comparative specialty, if you decide, you know what, I want to do plastic surgery as a as an international graduate, then it is going to be very difficult for you, or it's going to be more, you know, nothing is impossible, but it's definitely going to be more challenging to you, Like, you know, this 2015, there were only 3 spots filled by non-US IMGs in plastic surgery, and all the other spots were filled by people who had done their medical school in the US. Similar statistics are there even for neurosurgery. You know, about 15, 20 spots in the entire country were filled by non-US IMGs compared to all the other spots were done by the, you know, the American people. So definitely it is a little bit more challenging, not impossible. You have to pay your dues, and you can get to where you want.
Well, I got to imagine, you know, primary care here, what we talk about all the time, more primary care needed. So someone that wants to be a pediatrician or OBGYN or internal medicine, that would be highly in need. So I think there should be lots of spots in those residency programs on a relative basis.
Yep, that's exactly the thing. You know, so primary care is definitely something which is picked up a lot by international medical graduates. So most of the international medical graduates actually land up spots, taking spots in, you know, internal medicine, family medicine, pediatrics. I don't know what the statistics for OBGYN are, but most of the people land up in these 3 specialties compared to, like, you know, ENT and ophthalmology or neurosurgery.
Right.
So yes, primary care, pediatrics, and family practice are definitely, psychiatry also, are, you know, a couple of specialties which are definitely more foreign medical graduate friendly, so to say. And, you know, it is just like that. But, you know, it's, if you want to do something, if it's difficult but not impossible. And U.S. is very good about that. If you pay your dues, you know, if you show that you're a hardworking guy who's done, you know, who's paid his dues, then you can get to where you want. And that is the culture of the U.S., right?
Yes, absolutely.
The land of dreams and the land of opportunities.
Well, let me just tell you a quick story. One of my clients, he had a very similar story to yours, although it was a little later in life. He was born in Colombia, in South America, and he got his medical degree there. He started in practice, and he moved to his states a little later in his life. He was in his 40s, actually, and he went through residency, did fellowship through the Mayo, and he finally transitioned to practice in the greater Atlanta area. And originally, you know, he was so hopeful, he was so excited, and I thought it was awesome because he had no debt, right? I mean, you know, he could have the cash flow. And then within a few months, he was just miserable. He felt trapped, and it all came back for him because of the visa. And he needed to be in this position for 3 years, apparently, before he could get his green card. And what ended up happening in his practice, he was part of a small practice in his case, so there wasn't hundreds of physicians. He got stuck in horrible shifts, and he just couldn't take it anymore and decided to just move back to Colombia not too long ago. And, you know, I look at this kind of thing, and I think it's a huge problem for our country. I mean, here we got this incredibly intelligent, someone paying a lot of money in taxes, a contributing individual, and we can keep him here. So tell me about your perspective, because you have family here, you've seen people move back and forth. What's your view on dealing with green cards and physicians?
So, you know, the issue with him, and I'm very familiar with the issue because I also have a kind of a similar thing, is he was probably on a J-1 visa. And the J-1 visa is a visa which is given by the U.S. government as a student exchange visa. The aim of this visa is that you will come to the U.S., you will get education, and you can go back to your country and serve them if you want. If you do not want to do that, then you go work in an underserved area. So I also came on this similar visa, and if I wanted to get a green card, then I had to pay my dues by going to a place for 3 years. On paper, this seems like a very philanthropic thing to do, and, you know, so and so forth, but you're right. The U.S., this guy went back because of this. Maybe if I had the opportunity, I did not want to deal with all this of going to an underserved area and working, and, you know, it's very difficult to find jobs and being abused. And I said, this is just not worth my time. I have worked too hard to do that. You know, I mean, I worked too hard to do that. And that was kind of, that was not the reason why I moved back to India, but that was something which I always thought about. And what if I had that opportunity? Would I do that? It's kind of a rock and a hard place. You know, you do want to make sure that you can contribute to the improving the healthcare facilities in the world, and that's what the U.S. does theoretically when they offer people to come to the U.S. on a J-1 visa. But, you know, on the flip side, they don't want everybody who comes to stay too. You know, but if you want to, I think this should be made more easy, and they should be given the option in a better way than being forced to do something they're not comfortable with.
Yeah, what advice would you give to someone? What advice would you give to someone? You know, maybe they're in residency right now, maybe they're in fellowship, they have an MBBS, and they want to consider transitioning to practice and stay in the U.S. What advice would you give to them to avoid this kind of situation?
I would say just plan early. Just start early. You know, it's if you're in your first year or second year, even if, like, you have to start planning where to, you know, what you will do the day you will graduate a year and a half ago, at least a year and a half in advance. If you don't have a job and you have 8 months and you have 8 months to graduate, you're in trouble. So if you, you know, that's if you want to stay in practice, and if you have a visa issue, then yes, absolutely, you should be on your game. You have to work very hard on doing that, apart from your job. Yeah.
And do you think it's better being in a bigger hospital setting or a smaller practice? You know, if you compare and contrast those two, which do you think? Obviously, every situation is different, but if you had to generalize, which do you think would be more advantageous to
bigger,
an international?
I think a bigger hospital would definitely be more advantageous. And the reason is that, you know, with the healthcare reforms and the way healthcare is changing in the U.S., you know, a lot of these smaller places are closing down. They don't feel that they're a sustainable business model. A hospital may get bought over, so you may move with the hospital, but at least your practice won't get shut down, and you won't, you know, you won't be, it's not like, oh my God, now I'm without a job. I've done this thing for a year and a half, and now what do I do? So I think practically I would consider a bigger hospital as my employer compared to a group if I have any visa issues, because there's a little bit more stability that comes along with it.
Right. And usually there's more physicians around, which I think is my lesson from seeing this physician go through it. You know, it paid more being part of a small group, but it wasn't worth the cost emotionally that he had to go through.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, the hospital, for the most part, will have a stricter code of conduct compared to a small, you know, mom-and-pop shop, which has about four or five physicians working in a group. You know, the code of conduct, and, you know, they'll be probably a little bit more strict with the, you know, the rules and regulations and all that stuff.
Well, do you have any closing thoughts you want to share before we wrap up here?
No, I think the one thing I would like to tell everyone is, you know, if you are planning to, if you're an international graduate wanting to come to the U.S., you know, it's definitely a beautiful experience. I always wanted to add an international perspective to my education. I think it made me a better person. It definitely broadened my horizons, and you should definitely consider that. Work hard, keep your chin up, and, you know, just do that. And healthcare in the U.S. is great. I miss it. I miss it a lot. You know, I have a lot of friends there. I have a lot of family there, and I definitely enjoyed my time over there, and who knows what may happen, right?
Would you ever come back, do you think? Is that something that could happen in the future?
I don't know. When I moved to the U.S., it took me a couple of years before I got used to the system over there and everything else, right?
Yeah,
and now I'm just
here
for 8 months. You know, I can't make that call in 8 months, 8, 9 months, that, hey, you know what, I'm going to go back in 2 years. You know, I think it's too early. I definitely like it here. I have a lot of family here, and you know, I have a chauffeur, and I have a chef.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so you know, you have these small perks. So,
Life's a little easier, and family is so important. Well, just want to thank you, Dr. Gupta, for your time. I think this was fantastic, and I think it could really help a lot of people. And so if you're a resident or a fellow and you're listening to this and you might have questions for Dr. Gupta, what would be the best way to get a hold of you?
Just email me. Email is the best way. Yeah. My email address is samirgupta.cardio@gmail.com.
Wonderful. Cool. Well, thank you again for your time. If you are a physician and you're listening to this podcast and you want to have another subject covered, or you're interested in being a guest yourself, I'd love to have you on and talk about it. for the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. This is Dave Denniston. Thank you so much for listening. We'll check in again soon.